Caught Offside with Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney.
Oh, yes. Caught Offside in the suburbs of New York City in an apartment in Brooklyn, New York. Andrew Gunling and JJ Devaney, a bonus late night U.S. men's national team podcast. What's up, brother?
Oh, thank God for PFOC.
Oh, PFOC of many names. Yes.
Yes. Not a great night, Andrew. A night I think that can be divided in two ways. If you're a survive in advance person, this was just fine for you. If you were looking for a performance to carry with you for signs of progress and for bigger games to come, this probably won't cut it.
No, you can be both. I would say I consider myself both of those things. Look, it's much better to play poorly and win than it is to play poorly and lose, at least in a competitive tournament setting. I mean, like the loss to Switzerland, sometimes I think losses in friendlies can actually be constructive and helpful and ego checks. So I'm okay with that. But tonight I would have been genuinely disappointed had they lost, but I'm still not happy with what this looked like. We will get into all elements of this game from the CBS studio crew all the way through the performances of these players for the U.S. men tonight. And like you said, it was not a thing of beauty. You know, it's funny, JJ, as I was watching this, I sort of kept hearing Steven Mandis in my head, our guest from a couple weeks ago who had just
written the book. That's disturbing. You should get that checked out by a psychologist.
He had written the book, What Happened to the USMNT. And remember, the message that he kept preaching to us over and over again was about, you know, this group of individual players that, you know, just because they're of a similar age, it does not necessarily mean that this is going to be a cohesive unit. They're coming from all different backgrounds. They play in all different leagues. They play on all different teams. There is not a lot of unanimity between these guys. And it felt like that a little bit tonight watching this game. It didn't feel cohesive. It didn't feel like a unit that has really gelled yet. And maybe, you know, that can be frustrating to watch. Maybe it's a little bit understandable at times. This was maybe after all the first truly competitive match that they've played since 2019 in this tournament against Cuba. So, you know, they're still kind of feeling it out. And I think that was evident tonight.
Yeah. I think that's a kind interpretation of what we saw. I think if you want to go down a more harsh road and throw away the Mandis voice in the back of your head and go with the fact that maybe some of the personnel didn't work out, maybe center midfield is a real problem. Maybe as the guys at the Scuffed podcast, who always tweet well and pod well around the U.S. men's national team, they tweeted, it feels like disorganize the opponent with the ball, which is, of course, a Greg mantra, pretty quickly develops or devolves into give the rock to Gio or Christian and watch. And that was certainly the first half. Asking John Brooks to do far too much on the ball. Your goalkeeper clearly, although he made a crucial save at the end with his foot to stop an equalizer, which would have taken us to penalties. Your goalkeeper looking like at stages in the first half, he isn't playing much football, which he isn't.
Yeah. Well, how do you want to do this? You want to go through this in order of when things occurred, or do you want to kind of go through this player by player? You tell me. You lead the way here.
Well, let's go about in the order of the game.
Okay.
I think that's a good way to go.
Sure. I've taken some notes here.
All right. Well, I think Honduras, I thought, started brightly, and I want to give them their credit because they don't ever fail to show up. Very rarely do they fail to come and make it difficult and to make things CONCACAF-y and to get stuck in. And they've got some decent players that we know, Elise being one of them. But I thought they were, you know, they started brightly. They pressed. It's almost as if, you know, they had a pretty clear, like they divided the game into stages for me. Honduras pressed a little bit and then they dropped off a little bit And then in the second half, they dropped off almost entirely and were happy to allow our center backs to have the ball and kind of smother Reyna and smother Pulisic. I thought, the mantra in the studio at CBS at the end of the game from Clint Dempsey, Deuce, was that if we'd taken our chances early on, those early chances, you know, the Reyna chance, which he drags past the post after some lovely play from Dest and the creation of space by Dest and some quick feet, that was on 9 minutes, then, you know, we might be home and hosed by the middle of the first half. There was the McKenny free header over from a corner. There was Pulisic's clever ball to Legette. The cross was cut out. So, there were early chances too after a bright Honduras start. But I thought Honduras generally kind of found their footing then pretty quickly. And the first half was a drudge for the US, as was most of the second.
Well, we'll get to the second half. That's...
Yeah, I know. I'm just...
That's a story unto itself. Let's stick with the first half, because the first half, aside from the fact that a goal was scored in the second half, I thought the first half was far more eventful. You mentioned the first 15 minutes were pretty interesting at both ends. Both teams came out and looked like they wanted to play, essentially. Mm. I mean, Jackson Ewell was forced into making a nice defensive recovery early on for the U.S., and then the U.S. came right back after that. And like you said, that led to the great chance for Gio Reyna, which may very well have been the U.S.'s best chance of the game until the goal itself occurred late on. Mm. I thought Gio Reyna played really well, at least in the first half. The second half, again, like I said, we'll get to that. It became a slog, but Gio Reyna was very attack minded in the first half. You know, I think like everyone out there tonight, he probably could be a little bit better at times in the final third. But like I said, that's almost a blanket criticism of the U.S. in this game, I thought. But for me, in terms of taking the initiative and trying to make things happen, I thought Reyna was definitely a bright spot. It's crazy to think this was his first competitive match.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, the way certain tasks like bricklaying or, heavy machinery work, they callous the hands. And so for the future, your hands are much tougher for what's to come. This was a callousing game for Reyna tonight, because Honduras were not afraid to tackle, win the ball sometimes, most often than not win the ball with two-footed lunges. That you have to say, in European football, there would have been a lot more yellow cards, and certainly not one. I mean, the first card was came in the 56th minute for a foul on the aforementioned Reyna. I thought there was a couple of times we you will look very uncomfortable in the first half, Andrew, in that kind of number six role. He couldn't really find space for himself to get on the ball, to get progressive passes going. Often that responsibility was left to John Brooks, who had kind of mixed results with that. And also even from the defensive point of view, there was far too many times where John Brooks was coming out of position to almost play like a defensive midfielder and try and foul or try and win the ball. More often than not, he ended up fouling the Honduras player when they had their back to goal. But there was the middle of that second half, there was some real worry. Like that Honduras free kick that Stefan gets completely caught underneath.
That was still the first half.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Oh, I thought you said the second half.
No, first half. Middle of the first half. And yeah.
27th minute. Stefan comes. I don't know if he misjudges it.
He definitely does.
If he doesn't quite realize that there's a Honduran player over there, I don't know. But, I mean, it was easily the most harrowing moment of this match, I thought, for the U.S. And God bless Josh Sargent. He's not scoring a ton of goals, but if you're keeping them out like that at the other end, I guess you're doing something to help. So,
yeah, and in fairness...
It was one of the biggest moments, probably the second biggest moment of the game for the U.S. And Zach Steffen, I guess, like everyone else out there, I thought his night was a little bit uneven, because you had that, which was not a good moment, but then he's saving 1v1s in the second half. You know, he had moments where he came up big as well.
There was a few too many of those 1v1s as well. You'd have to ask questions about how that happened so regularly. But you're right. Honestly, Andrew, the thing about Stefan is he's got to play more. And there was a kind of a feel-good glow about the fact he'd be on the bench for Manchester City in the Champions League final. And I understand that it was nice to say we have two Americans there. But he doesn't play regularly enough for City, and it doesn't look like he will get that chance. And so, you know, you kind of want him to to find a place where he's going to get lots of games, even if it's not at the best team in England. It's, you know, it, goalkeepers have to play. They can get away with it for a while, but eventually they have to play. Sargent then was busy 3 minutes later. A great cross from Anthony Robinson. The header was a bit of a camera save. It was a bit central, but still it had to be saved, and the Honduran keeper did it. And then Pulisic was in 1v1, played in by Reyna. And that was, I felt like that was a, how shall I put it, that a marker in the game. That was the last of the big US chances. After that, it became much more difficult as, you know, Honduras sat in a bit and played on the break, but also Honduras kept disrupting our attempts at midfield play, kept stealing the ball away, kept smothering Pulisic, kept kicking Reyna. And things kind of
got very CONCACAF-y.
They got, they did, but also Honduras were well organized, and you got that creeping feeling as the game developed that it's more likely Honduras will score on a break here and catch the US off guard than it is that the US will score themselves.
Yeah, I mean, the US were pushing forward. They had that high line, which left a lot of space in behind. And you're right, it led to a couple frightening moments for the US. We mentioned the 1v1 where Stefan came up big. There were a couple of those. I think one was nullified afterwards by a late offside flag going up, but there were some frightening moments there. I would say that there was, just kind of looking at the entire team, there wasn't really any group, like the, whether it be attacking, midfield, defense, goalkeeper. I wouldn't look at any group from this team tonight and say, okay, they really filled me with confidence.
No,
I'm not saying that I'm down on the team. I'm just looking at tonight's game. I'm not using this on a, you know, to make any broader point about what I think of this team. I'm just talking about this performance tonight. I don't know. I'm glad they won, but it just kind of was a blah performance.
Yeah, it was a blah performance. But like look at some of the things that we've noticed over the past few friendlies that we've got excited about. Like, say when Dest or whoever the other fullback is are kind of tucked inside making those, they're not really inverted, but those penetrative runs inside rather than overlapping. So they'd be underlapping runs inside. We didn't really see any of that. Okay, that's one thing. Sebastian Legette, who's a bright spark generally for the team. Andrew, it was about as poor as he's been for the side in a long time. In the first half, failed to control a ball where he would have been through. Didn't get to it, should have got there. And then I think it was in the second half, I counted two free kicks from him that failed to clear the first defender. Like, the set pieces were really, really poor.
They had two set pieces tonight that I thought, oh, nice. There was the one, both off corner kicks. One where, like you mentioned, McKinney had a free header. I mean, there was no one within like 5 yards of him on any side.
He just had to get up. It was just maybe a fraction too high. Just a fraction. He had to get up a bit too much.
And then shortly after that, I think it was, they had kind of the design set piece where
it was
played somewhat short on the ground, rolled to Dest, who then kind of fired one towards net, which was blocked. But I like the general design of that and the thought process that went into it. But other than that, you're right. Legette had a few, like you said, that didn't make it past the first man. There weren't really any others that were truly threatening that I can think of. It was, and they had a fair amount of them. I mean, there were a lot of corners tonight for the US. I give them credit getting into that, getting those as often as they did. Not enough there. I'm sure Alexi Lalas was probably rolling his eyes many, many times tonight with set pieces.
Yeah, I just a couple other units. I wanted to talk about number six. I didn't think Ewell got on the ball enough. I don't think he fulfilled his screening duties that he would have had as a center midfielder playing in that position well. Sometimes his passing was wayward. He was caught in possession a little too often. Not really working for me, and it makes you cry out maybe for Tyler Adams in that position. Not only that, asking John Brooks to do a lot of things. So I noticed Honduras would press up on our midfield, but they were happy to let Brooks and McKenzie have the ball. Because, you know, I mean, Brooks can play a decent diagonal.
He's a good passer. He's a good passer.
I think you're still asking too much of him. You know, you want someone to drop in, have the center back split if possible, like Adams did. I think it was the friendly against Jamaica where he'd drop in, the center backs had split, he'd collect the ball, and they'd start the process of playing and playing in a pattern. That can't happen if it's Brooks on the ball. I'm sorry. He's fine. He's okay, but he's, I don't want it constantly. Honduras do. Opposition teams will. And there was one moment, it was around the 45th minute. Brooks is on the ball looking to play out, loses it. Elise gets in behind, skins McKenzie. Mm-hmm. He squares the ball. The ball flashes across the goal. And I'm thinking that's 1-0.
That was the one right before half, right?
Right before halftime, yeah. So we got lucky there. And also Christian Pulisic, I think, big problem for me is he was dropping so deep to get on the ball. He'd turn and then he'd get hacked or fouled. And in CONCACAF, perfect for an opposition. That's perfect. First of all, the likelihood of a yellow card is minimal. Minimal. You're fouled 50 yards from goal or 40 yards from goal, and you can sit in and regain your shape. So Pulisic doing that didn't really work. He tried to stay deeper in the second half as the US line, defensive line, compressed the play and advanced anyway, but there was just no space to do anything.
Yeah, he was fairly ineffective, I would say.
Yeah, there was a stat that the CBS team put out midway through the second half. He had 32 touches on the ball, which was like the second least of an outfield player. That's not good enough for your best player, but it's also, you have to find him and you have to create patterns of play to use the Greg Berhalter term to disrupt and to get him on the ball and to get him in between the lines. And it didn't really work. And I also thought we just didn't get the ball wide enough. We were very narrow in our attack. I thought a couple of times we could have done something, maybe try and switch the play quicker and get those flying wide players down the line, get them into position a bit more, find the spaces in behind. Didn't happen.
The narrowness in attack is, I'm glad you brought that up, because that was a criticism that I saw from people about the Switzerland performance as well. And I'm wondering now if that's twice within the span of a week where we're talking about that being an issue for this team in the final third, if some sort of tactical change maybe should be made to try to widen the attack.
It's funny because in the first half, there was a switch to either Leggett or Dest, a diagonal that found them in space wide. And then there was one to Pulisic, that shot overshot him. And he put his hand up and he did the little, oh yeah. And there was another one actually, to give Euler's credit. He did a diagonal, but it was more of a cross ball, which Leggett failed to control, but they didn't do it very much. And it was a kind of an obvious way to try and put maybe Honduras on their back heels is to play a diagonal ball. But then again, I say that's when Honduras were playing out a little bit. We're trying to play. Once they sat in, it made it much more harder to do that.
Yeah. The second half. So when I was taking notes tonight, my first half notes, I have a lot written down, many moments that stood out to me. JJ, the second half was such a painful and difficult watch. Some of that, the US's fault, they just weren't very good. I think players were starting to tire. I was a little bit surprised that Triple G waited as long as he did to make a substitution.
Right.
I think it wasn't until, what was it, like the 74th or something?
When
he finally made a change. And then, I mean, let's be honest, let's call it what it is. Honduras just, I mean, they literally stopped playing. I mean, I would say from like the 58th minute to the 70th minute, so 12 minutes of real time, we might have had what, like 3 to 4 minutes of actual soccer being played? It was just one guy going down after another. I don't know how much of this was just like the dark arts, as you say. I don't know how much of this was Honduras being asked to play a game in the high altitude of Denver, and guys who were genuinely exhausted and genuinely cramping up. I don't know, but what I do know is that it made for just a brutal watch. It brought the game to a screeching halt. And if that was by design, I mean, maybe Honduras, either they A, wanted to get to penalties, B, just wanted to slow down what they thought was maybe somewhat of a threatening U.S. attack, or,
ding,
or
ding,
C,
ding,
I guess
ding,
it could ding. Be all of these things.
All those things. Probably all those things. I saw...
It sucked, though, is what it did. It was
hard to watch. You saw the young ladies that were part of the stretcher. They were the first stretcher battalion who were coming on to strap in Honduran players. And I don't want anyone to take me the wrong way here, but one of those injuries where the Honduras player was down was clearly not an injury. Mm-hmm. So the sight of him being put on a stretcher by, I don't know, are they students? I don't know, are they medical staff in training, or are they fully qualified? I don't know. But there was something really pathetic about that image. that there was like six people carrying this guy off who had nothing wrong with him.
Yeah.
All right. And then there was the second battalion who came in later, who were a male battalion carrying other people off. It was like the Somme, except with cramp and lots of spray, which the Somme did not have. And I also saw if we're going to talk about weird stuff, I would describe Maynard Figueroa as the most experienced player on that field tonight by some distance at 38 years of age and his Premier League experience and everything else, international experience. His tackle on Reyna in the box. Two-footed, like flying kung fu tackle. Now, he got the ball, so he got away with it. Got away with it is the only way to describe it. Like, it was such kind of craziness, because it only takes for one more nick at the ball from Reyna for Reyna to be seriously injured, but also for it to be a penalty. Now, quickly after that, Lozano was denied by Stefan on the break. I think that was an offside, though. But even still, the danger was there. My notes. My notes are very, very like 65 minutes. You had the Elise break and the shot, which was offside, though he blazed it over the bar. Mm-hmm. But there was one other interesting thing interesting things that had not that much to do with actual play. A Bearhalter coaching on the sideline was very clear what he was saying. So Reggie Cannon comes on. I remember he kicked one straight out over the line. He tried to roll about a 12-yard pass and it goes out over the line. And did you see what Bearhalter said to him?
I saw he said something, but I couldn't read his lips. No, I thought he said 10 minutes around the 80th. But
maybe he said that. I thought he said, take your time. We have space. Trust me. Or maybe it was take your time.
You read his lips. You could tell that that's what he said.
He said, trust me at the end. That was the one part I can be absolutely 100% sure about. And I thought that was curious. It was like, he's trying to get them. Don't force things. Play it inside. Keep possession. Trust the process. Mm-hmm. And also Tyler Adams getting booked was kind of funny.
That was a very confusing sequence. I couldn't tell who was being booked until a minute or so later. They said what did he do? He ran on the field.
I think he may have been shouting or mouthing, or he'd come onto the field or out of the technical area to give instruction or whatever. But, you know, it was weird because, people are getting kung fu kicked around the place on this field. And that's the yellow that needs to be delivered.
And then the yellow that Honduras finally got for the tackle on Gio Reyna, the late tackle.
Diego Rodriguez in the 57th minute. Yeah.
I thought it was even later than that. I thought it was from Costa who came on for Honduras, who stepped on Reyna's foot as he was unleashing the pass down the field. He took a beating tonight. I guess that's what's going to happen. Look, like I said, he was probably the U.S.'s best player. He was definitely their most involved. And so if you're going to decide to be involved in a CONCACAF game of import, this is what's going to happen to you.
I think, like I said, this was a callousing experience. He is a hardened man. Going forward, he knows what's going to happen now. And I always think back to that game in the last ill-fated World Cup qualifying in Honduras where we got that late. Was it a Bobby Wood goal to equalize? 1-1. Remember that? The stadium was absolutely packed. It was roasting hot. The field was both hard and the grass was quite long, which was something that Dempsey noticed. And I just couldn't help but think about our Champions League players, our Adams, our Tylers, our also thinking about Musa, guys like that, I was surprised we didn't see Musa tonight, but that's another point. You know, what we saw tonight in Denver, this is only the tip of the iceberg, my friends.
And a lot of these guys have yet to see it. JJ, this was the... what was the stat that I saw tonight, that the average age of the U.S.'s starting 11 was 23 years and 259 days old?
Yeah.
The second youngest fielded by the U.S. men's national team in an official competition. I mean, it's, you know, this is what we wanted. Like, this is, you looked out on the field tonight and like, there's no Michael Bradley. There's no Tim Ream. There's no Jozy Altidore. This is essentially with a couple exceptions, you know, maybe certainly Tyler Adams, Yunus Musa, another one, but like, otherwise this is your team, folks. And to be honest, I almost don't even really want to hear again, not downplaying the absence of a Tyler Adams. He's very important. But like, I unless it's Pulisic that's not playing, I almost don't want to hear the excuse ever again of, well, yeah, but we didn't have so-and-so tonight. Okay, like, here's a newsflash for everybody. I've been watching U.S. soccer for a really long time. So have you. So is pretty much everybody listening to this podcast. We're never going to be 100% healthy.
Doesn't happen.
It's the nature of the game. That's not an American thing. Look at England. Trent Alexander-Arnold, gone. Like, this is just the nature of the international game this time of year. Players who are coming off long seasons, it's tough to be physically fit right out of the gate in these high-stakes games. So this is just how it is. You're going to have a deep squad. Jackson Ewell, Reggie Cannon, guys like this, they're going to have to be ready to step in and perform. And tonight, I would say, no, didn't really happen. But like I said, it's a win. It is survive in advance. And on we go. Sunday, there will be a chance to win some hardware.
Let's talk about the goal before we get out. Cibichu, Brooks on the ball, clips one to McKennie, who was inexplicably marked, and it was about the only ball that was going to penetrate Honduras all night. McKennie powers his header right into the path of Cibichu, and I think Aronson was in front of it, which disrupted the defender's view of the ball coming through.
I was almost worried he was going to touch it.
Yeah,
you could see that Cibichu was in line to score that goal, and I was just hoping, oh, I hope Aronson doesn't screw this up.
And Cibichu took it well up off the bounce, and Andreas Cordeiro on commentary after the goal said he was surprised by Brooks being the one to initiate the attack for the goal. I'm paraphrasing, but that's pretty much what he said. But like, who else would it have been? Think about it. Like, Brooks was on the ball. They were happy to let the center backs be on the ball. And as they fell deeper and deeper, Brooks and McKenzie got further up the field. So it was actually more likely to be him than any of the midfielders. Certainly not Ewell. Certainly not Acosta, who came in. It made total sense to me that that was what was going to happen. And thankfully, they were able to execute. And
it was a pretty well-worked goal. I don't know. Maybe I think more highly of Brooks as a passer than you do. I'm getting that sense from this conversation.
No. It's not so much that he can't pass or he's not that good of a passer. He's decent. He is decent, but he was on it all night long. He had a couple, like I said, I mentioned before, he had the ball where he tried to ping it in, gave it away, and suddenly he's caught up the field and they're in behind. That happened twice, I think. But I'm just saying it was more likely to be him to hit the pass than it was any of our midfielders who were, I mean, certainly wasn't going to be legit. It wasn't going to be Ewell. It wasn't happening for them. They weren't able to, or they couldn't find the gaps to do it. So yeah, it was likely to be Brooks. I'd love to see Brooks's amount of time on the ball, his touches on the ball. That'd be some interesting stats. Which we might have a look at maybe later. But again, wasn't over. Even at 1-0, it wasn't over. There was that long ball that went to Elise who beats Brooks.
Yeah.
A bit too easily for my liking. And Stefan comes up with a good foot save with his right foot and basically ensures that we don't go to any more drama tonight.
Back to the goal for a sec.
Okay.
So preparing for Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, we keep talking, like earlier this week, we did a podcast talking about the U.S. in the wake of the Switzerland game. And, you know, I spoke about Josh Sargent and how I like him. There's clearly a player in there who is good, who can score goals, I think, who can be a playmaker. I know that, but for whatever reason, any number of reasons, it is not necessarily translating into actual physical goals. And Cibichu comes on and gets one right away. And, you know, he had an excellent season for Young Boys, whereas Sargent's was probably a little more uneven for Werder Bremen. I get it, completely different leagues. But I just wonder now, okay, so Sunday, with a chance to win a trophy here and win this tournament, and you want to go out and play your best 11, it feels to me like Cibichu should probably be the choice.
Yes. I'd like more of a chance to see what he can do, you know, in his build-up play. How is he with his back to goal? Things like that. But it's not really happening for Sargent, even though he cleared one off the line. He had that header.
But that was a great moment, but that's not what he's really there to be doing.
No, I know. There was a couple of times, again, he suffered from a lot of what was happening. There was more than one time where it was either Brooks or someone played the ball and he'd come short, way short, right into the midfield, take a touch, it'd go back to Ewell or to someone. And that's not really what you want to see him doing. So I know tonight was another game without a goal. He wasn't overly impressive, but I mean, if we're looking at how few touches Pulisic got, if we're looking how difficult it was for our midfield to find the forwards, then surely we have to say that the same thing happened for Sargent, that he was in the same position. I actually think he'll start again.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I think Berhalter will start him again.
One note on the goal. So Cibicu's goal, 88 minutes and 8 seconds. That was the latest game winner by a USA player in an official match since Aaron Johansson, 92 minutes, 39 seconds on October 15th, 2013. Do you know the significance of that game? This is a tough one. October 15th, 2013. That, JJ, was that infamous match where the U.S. in a World Cup qualifier with nothing at stake came back and beat Panama 3-2 in stoppage time to eliminate Panama in a game that they had everything to play for. And it was the game that allowed Mexico into the playoff qualifiers for the World Cup. They were gone. They were done. They were going to be out of the World Cup. And the U.S., for no reason, came back in dramatic fashion and beat Panama that night. And that eliminated the Panama. I remember, who was it after that game? Members of the U.S. talking about how Panamanian players were basically pleading with them, stop, why are you doing this? Please don't do this to us. Well, they couldn't help it. It was just the U.S., they were just going to play till the final whistle, and they beat them. But yeah, this tonight was the latest goal since that one. That
and night. Further, copper fastening the U.S.'s great standing in Central America.
Yeah. Thanks, by the way, to Mexico for reciprocating a couple years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. Just a quick one that I found kind of interesting, because we are obviously recording straight after the game, so we haven't got too much reaction except our own thoughts and the notes that we've put down. But I saw Charles Bohm, the journalist, had some quotes from Berhalter. Berhalter, first of all, we advanced to a final. We're happy, and this game is exactly what we needed when you think about the level of competition, the competitiveness of the game. Some of these guys have never seen that before. So really happy with how they dealt with it. Now, if you're trying to tell me that Christian Pulisic and Giovanni Reyna, who play in the Champions League, have never seen...
He's not talking about them.
No, he's talking about something very, very specific, which we alluded to earlier, which is CONCACAF. And I think he's right, because the World Cup qualifiers are going to be... Well, hopefully now that they will experience this and they'll have the Gold Cup in the summer, and hopefully they go very, very deep in that. That will mean that there's no surprises for what's to come in CONCACAF World Cup qualifying. This squad, these sheltered, pampered European stars of ours will be under no illusions as to what's to come. And that is something that you can't underestimate how important that is. The refs aren't going to give you frees you get every week in, week out in the Bundesliga or the Premier League. The pitches aren't going to be as pristine as you're usually playing on. The conditions are going to be that bit more different, hostile, and things are not going to go your way. And also the aggression of the opponent. CONCACAF, if I'm to use what the teenagers say these days, Andrew, CONCACAF has no chill, zero chill whatsoever. No.
That's never been more beautifully summed up than in the Gold Cup when the U.S. lost to Jamaica. And remember, they called that handball on Brad Friedel as he was releasing the ball. Brad Guzan, I'm sorry.
Right on the edge of the box. The ball.
Like a play that probably happens 15 times in every single game.
Oh,
but
stop.
That's we're calling it. We're calling it now. And sure enough, Jamaica scored. Something I wanted to ask you about, we haven't really talked about this, but it kind of came to my mind just now as you were talking, about So the U.S. are playing their A squad. Berhalter's talking about, you know, guys who haven't, who aren't necessarily accustomed to what they're going to be, what's going on here in CONCACAF. They're used to their leagues, that style, you know, whatever. That's what they've seen. And now they're going to be introduced to a new way of playing. And I think about that. And I think about wanting to get these guys as accustomed as possible to playing here, to playing with this group, and to playing in these sorts of CONCACAF conditions. And it makes me wonder, I'm not blaming anyone per se, but the frustration of deciding to play essentially your A squad for these two games. And then the Gold Cup, my guess is, I mean, already Borussia Dortmund have denied Gio Reyna, and you know, because it's, that tournament is going to overlap with Borussia Dortmund preparations.
Right.
And we're going to be seeing that over and over again in the weeks to come, I'm sure. And so I think, you know, we've known for quite some time now that the Gold Cup is going to be much more of a B squad, an MLS lineup. And I just wonder about the frustration of that, of the Gold Cup possibly being A, more games for these guys to have been able to play together, B, a more conventional tournament setting, you know, just like a better rehearsal for a World Cup. And I just wonder, like, it's frustrating that can only happen here, where our preeminent tournament in this region gets, you know, players like this would not happen in Copa America. This would not happen in the European Championships. But like the Gold Cup, where we would want our best players playing together, more games, tournament setting, here it doesn't happen. And well, that's frustrating to me.
Yeah, it is frustrating, but there have been instances in the past. Was it the 2015 or the tournament where players joined after the group stages? Mm-hmm. So there were more senior posts. So we don't know. Maybe dispensations will be made for our better players to play.
But as the tournament progresses, the problem is the Gold Cup is late this year. Mm. And so as it gets closer to the start of domestic leagues, players are going to be pulled away for their preseasons. Like I said, Reyna, Borussia Dortmund has already ruled him out. And so that's just going to be how it is. We're going to see, it's going to be more of an MLS based unit, I'm guessing, for that tournament. And that's just kind of frustrating to me.
It is.
I'll be honest, I don't have a ton else to say. This game just generally was not a lot of fun. I'm glad we won. The goal was dramatic. Anytime you score a late goal to advance to a final of a tournament, that's a fun moment. But on the whole, I didn't love this game. Really, JJ, my MVP of the night, dude, I did not, expect to see Clint Dempsey on television. Like, when he retired, I think we even talked about it. I was like, well, his personality, he's just kind of like a little more reserved. I think this is it. I think maybe we'll see him paraded out for like ceremonial stuff. But like, I think now we all say goodbye to Deuce. And not only is he now on television, which I didn't expect, but he's really good. He's real. I love watching him and hearing from him and his insight and his enthusiasm. Like, that was so awesome. I watching him do this.
I think I saw the insight, or I think I saw the enthusiasm. I thought I saw the back and forth. I think he enjoyed things. I'm not sure I got very much insight. But that's a panel. That's Oguchi Onyewu, Clint Dempsey, Charlie Davies. That's really settling in. So hopefully it gets better. I wasn't as impressed as everybody else was.
You don't like anything.
No.
Generally, speaking in life.
All right.
It's kind of your thing to not like things.
He showed up. I mean, 20% of the conversation was about having, you know, whether he'd wear the shades or not. Okay. That was pretty good. I thought what was the most entertaining thing for me pregame was Oguchi Onyewu just kind of subtly disagreeing with every point, or not even in some cases, not so subtly disagreeing with every point that Charlie Davies made. I thought that was good. But yeah, no, I wasn't. Nice to see him. It's good to see him, but hoping for more. Just like this U.S. men's national team, hoping for more.
You just have to be unapologetically you. Hey, I give you credit.
No,
it's an approach to life, no, I suppose.
Seriously, you're annoying me now. If you want me to come on and lie about things, then fine.
That's exactly what I want.
Right, okay. That was great. Ted Lasso is great. And, you know, nice. There we are. I don't know why you do this. Just, you can't accept me for me. It's not made up.
I accept it.
I'm giving my opinion. I'm glad everyone got such a buzz out of seeing him. And it'll be good to see him develop as a, as an analyst. It's, I'm sure it's not something that's very easy doing live TV. Good luck to him. Looking forward to it. Incredible. You did this. Poisoning the end of the show.
It's just so sadly predictable.
It's not.
Sunday we'll be in a final.
We will be in a final. We don't know with whom it shall be yet. As we go to record, it's 0-0 between the Mexican national team and the Costa Rican national team.
Yeah. No sense in analyzing that right now because, yeah, like you said, we don't know.
We don't know.
But we know the U.S. will be there. Hopefully it will be a better performance. I wonder if, let's say that it's not. Let's say it's U.S.-Mexico. Again, it's an ugly performance, but the U.S., like tonight, wins, beats Mexico, wins a trophy. Like, I do wonder how it will be received. Are people so caught up right now in process over results that they won't really be able to enjoy it? Or is any win for this team right now that yields a trophy just something to be celebrated? I kind of hope that we can get to that place where it's we can enjoy it.
Oh, it's Mexico in a final. And
if
if it's Mexico in a final, if it's Costa Rica in a final, we've got beef with Costa Rica from the last qualification campaign where they came and severely damaged our chances, as it turned out. And with Mexico, if it is Mexico, Berhalter, I think if the two most chastening nights, three, I'd include Canada away in that. The three most chastening nights, two of those have been against Mexico.
Yeah.
The Gold Cup defeat in Chicago, where that was a really engaging game. And the friendly that happened that following September, September 2019, that was a tough defeat where, you know, some of our players did not acquit themselves in the fashion that we'd hoped. We all remember Tecatito versus Sergiño Dest. Mm-hmm. And then there was the Canada game. So if it's Mexico, it's a huge game. You can call it the CONCACAF Chocolate Cup. You can call it whatever you want. You can call it the, you know, sponsored by Windex. It doesn't matter. It'll be Mexico versus the US or Costa Rica versus the US, two big rivals in CONCACAF. If I know you're on about, you know, if they win it, that's great. Performances will matter. A good performance will lead to a victory. And the performance wasn't good tonight. So that's why there's people that, you know, okay, it's great to be in the final, but that wasn't a good performance. We're hoping for a better performance on Sunday.
No, you're right. I just know that this is a thing that this American fan base can sometimes do. And look, I get it. I have a lot of that in me as well. But I remember, like, you and I would joke about it during the Women's World Cup, where, like, the U.S. women are winning every game and people just, like, couldn't enjoy that because they were so annoyed with Jill Ellis and some of her decisions. And I remember us talking about it and being like, people are just going to rip her all the way through her carrying that trophy off the field, aren't they? Like, and this is different, obviously.
This is different. But
as a fan base, we do have some of that in us where we get so caught up in what it looks like sometimes that I wonder if it takes away from enjoying the results.
Yeah, but I think there's a disconnect there. What it looks like, what it looks like influences the result. Like a good performance, you can see it. That was not a good performance tonight, but agreed. We got it done. But you can't deny the things that you see with your eyes and your ears. And the thing that annoys me about this fan base in the past has never been the wanting more. It's the losing their minds at, like, hockeying some team 7-0 or 5-0 or 4-0 or beating, like, the Netherlands and Germany in a friendly. That's the stuff that annoys me.
Yeah, but that stuff doesn't happen as much anymore.
Nope.
I think the fan base has learned and changed.
Those
7-0s, like, all you heard was, yeah, but look who it was against. We enjoyed it. It was fun to watch our guys score a lot of goals, but that was the overriding theme of that whole run of games.
Nah, I'm not so sure about that. I'll never, ever forget the fireworks in Orlando the night, like, with one game left.
All right. Well, first of all, that was not that was not a meaningless friendly. That was a World Cup qualifier
with fireworks, even though the job wasn't done.
again, I think that's, we're having one of these disconnects of cultures. Like, I think sometimes you just get more pageantry in American stadiums.
Oh,
I'm serious. Like NFL games at kickoff, when the ball is kicked, fireworks go off around the top of the stadiums. Like, I don't think it's quite as unusual as you might have deemed it.
I had not seen fireworks. I suppose it's all conditioned by what came after that night, which we shall not speak of. But anyway, we're going off topic here. Sunday, I want a good performance. You know, a good performance and a defeat will mean a lot. That would mean a huge amount, and it's something we can carry forward. But we don't know who we're playing yet, so we're kind of shooting in the dark here, my friend.
Well, I look forward to it. It will be nice to see this team in action once again. I'm very curious what the starting 11 will look like, how many new faces we'll see. We did not see Yunus Musah tonight. It wouldn't shock me if we saw him on Sunday. I'd kind of like to see him, to be perfectly honest. We'll see if Tyler Adams is healthy enough to play for the U.S. I think that would be vitally important, given some of what we saw tonight. But I would also tell him, don't push it. It's not, you know, it's important, but it's, you know, don't hurt yourself further. That would be more important. But hey, this was fun. Anytime you win a game in a game of meaning, it's a good night. So I will take it. But yeah, the performance left something to be desired. The game was not full of joy. We'll be back, I guess, on Sunday. Are we going to have another bonus pod to recap that? That's a late one, I believe.
We're in a final, Andrew.
Yeah.
We're in a final. And so it behooves us to do something for our listeners.
Well, there you have it. JJ has spoken. Hey, this was fun, man. We'll do it again on Sunday, win or lose. To you, I say...
check your Sunday, Andrew.
See ya.
Take care.
You've been listening to the Caught Offside Soccer Podcast.